Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are turning towards life and we're extremely happy to be with you here today in your ears, in your heart, in your mind, and be of whatever use we can be for you. We have been told that we help people go to sleep when they have trouble sleeping. We accompany people in medical treatments that are long and difficult, that we bring joy on a dog walk, all kinds of different things. So you're very welcome here and welcome to listen to us in whatever way serves you in your life. It's a joy that we could be with you in those moments. And I just want to say it would be so lovely to hear from you. If you feel like reaching out and you keep thinking, oh, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that, please do. Lizzie@turningtowards.life, Justin@turningtowards.life. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to email both of us, you can say, is it hello@turningtowards.life, Justin? So if you want to hit us both at the same time with your lovely email, your message, we love that. We really love that. And we always talk about it and we always have a conversation. We always reply. So please do reach out. We'd love to hear from you. The other thing to say is that you can join us for season two of our Turning Towards Life Live thing that we do. It's starting soon. You can find out more about it on turningtowards.life if you want to come and join us. We would love to have you. It's a very safe, warm, kind, brilliant, creative space where you would get to meet people who are like-hearted, like-minded, and love these kinds of conversations, and then be in the inquiries for yourself. And we would do this practice that we do here there, and you would have a go and do that. The seasons are 6 months long each, and the next one is on healthy power. So this means we're going to be having sources and inspiration from people who have been writing about what it means to be a healthy source of power in the world and holding that between us and seeing how that happens. We are in February 2026, and we would love you to join us for the next season of that as well. So please reach out with any questions you have, any concerns, any queries about it. Know you're very welcome. And today we have a source chosen by Justin from this book that you're reading, Justin. How wonderful. Another one that I know would never really come across my path unless you told me about it. It's really wonderful. I went on a yoga retreat yesterday, Justin, and I was looking at somebody's bookshelf, that the woman who was running it. And there were lots of books that were the same and there were lots of books that were different. And I was just marveling again at just how huge the world is of people doing wonderful things, writing books. It's such a thing to write a book, such a big thing to write a book. And so many people have done it. This beautiful labor of love that this source comes from today, and somebody sitting at their desk in that kind of void of creativity and just doing it. So I'm feeling very honoring of that, that enables all of our sources to be here and enables us to be people who've written things. And I'm just very in awe of the creative process and that things get made in the world that really help us. So thank you. Thank you to this author, Solveig Ballet, that you've chosen for us today, Justin. It's really beautiful.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. And it's really, really excellent to be here. And I was just thinking whilst you were talking, yes, how wonderful it is to hear from people. So I'm going to say again, hello@turningtowards.life. And the other thing I'll say is, if you go to turningtowards.life, you can find out about our Third Space professional coaching course, which starts in July. You can find out about Turning Towards Life Live, which starts in March. And you can also find out, you can see all the recordings. You can sign up to our email where you get the source and a link to the recordings and all that kind of stuff every week direct to your inbox. And you can support us. And I just want to say, we don't often say this directly, but thank you to all of you who buy us cups of coffee metaphorically regularly, which helps keep the wheels rolling on all of the technology and everything of this conversation we're in. You can do that there too. It's actually quite fun to talk about our turningtowards.life website, Lizzie, because there's a lot there these days. I remember when we set it up and it's sort of grown in resource and size. It's a wonderful resource. So now on to our practice. I think we haven't said this for a while, Lizzie, that what we'll do is I'll read and then you'll read. And then we're going to have an unhurried conversation. One of the joys of this conversation is we have time to see what arises. And the conversation is as much about what's arising in us and between us as it is about Solveig Ballet's source. And I've been thinking quite a lot about what it is to have unhurried conversation where we don't have to rush because we think somebody else is about to jump in and interrupt us or finish the thought for us. And we don't have to rush with our, oh, I've got to get into the conversation to have something to say. It's deliberately very, very spacious. So here we are being very, very spacious. Now, this source, which you can find in the show notes and on the website and in the email, as you said, this is by Solveig Ballet. It's from a novel that I am absolutely loving called On the Calculation of Volume that a very dear friend recommended to me a few weeks ago. And what I'll say about the novel is that it's about a woman who wakes up every day and it's still November the 18th. So it's a little bit like Groundhog Day, but it was written before Groundhog Day. It's only recently been published, but it was actually written before Groundhog Day came out. And she lives in a house with her husband who is not in on a repeating loop. And she has to figure out how to live in a different kind of time from somebody she really loves. It's really beautiful and extraordinarily written. And here's this source, which is a little extract. It seems so odd to me now how one can be so unsettled by the improbable. When we know that our entire existence is founded on freak occurrences and improbable coincidences, that we wouldn't be here at all if it weren't for those curious twists of fate, that there are human beings on what we call our planet, that we can move around on a rotating sphere in a vast universe full of inconceivably large bodies comprised of elements so small that the mind simply cannot comprehend how small and how many they are. That in this unfathomable vastness, these infinitesimal elements are still able to hold themselves together, that we manage to stay afloat, that we exist at all, that each of us has come into being as only one of untold possibilities. The unthinkable is something we carry with us always. It has already happened. We are improbable. We have emerged from a cloud of unbelievable coincidences. Anyone would think that this knowledge would equip us in some small way to face the improbable, but the opposite appears to be the case. We've grown accustomed to living with that knowledge without feeling dizzy every morning, and instead of moving around warily and tentatively in constant amazement, we behave as if nothing has happened, take the strangeness of it all for granted, and get dizzy if life shows itself as it truly is, improbable, unpredictable, remarkable.
Thanks, Justin. It seems to me so odd to me now how one can be so unsettled by the improbable. When we know that our entire existence is founded on freak occurrences and improbable coincidences, that we wouldn't be here at all if it weren't for these curious twists of fate. That there are human beings on what we call our planet, that we can move around on a rotating sphere in a vast universe full of inconceivably large bodies comprised of elements so small that the mind cannot comprehend how small and how many they are. That in this unfathomable vastness, these infinitesimal elements are still able to hold themselves together, that we manage to stay afloat, that we exist at all, that each of us has come into being as only one of untold possibilities. The unthinkable is something we carry with us always. It has already happened. We are improbable. We have emerged from a cloud of unbelievable coincidences. Anyone would think that this knowledge would equip us in some small way to face the improbable, but the opposite appears to be the case. We have grown accustomed to living with that knowledge without feeling dizzy every morning. And instead of moving around warily and tentatively in constant amazement, we behave as if nothing has happened. Take the strangeness of it all for granted and get dizzy if life shows itself as it truly is. Improbable, unpredictable, remarkable.
Thank you, Lizzie. I've got so much to say about this, I don't even know where to start. But I think there's two things I feel like I want to say to begin. So one is, as you were reading, Lizzie, I was thinking about all the strategies we have to try and to pretend to ourselves that we're in charge of things, like we're in control of things. There's so many things that I know I do that sort of give me the illusion that I'm making things happen. And some things I am making happen, but there's a lot of things I'm not making happen at all. One of which, for example, right now, is that I could make all kinds of moves as I'm speaking to try and guide you to say the kinds of things that I think I would want to happen in this conversation. And I could imagine that that's what I'm doing. But you, as an unlikely, improbable, unpredictable, remarkable being sitting across from me, are going to say exactly whatever it is that you're going to say. And it would be certainly in the terms of this conversation, it would be such a misuse of whatever power I have and such a misuse of any anxiety that I have to try and sort of imagine that my job is to get you in line somehow and have the conversation go my way. So I've got a sort of whole question about anxiety and control going on in a world that, as Solveig says, it's such an unbelievable coincidence that anything is here at all, and that, like, how could we even begin to think that we're in charge of all of this? And then I've got a parallel stream about wonder. And I've been practicing. So you and I both live in London, Lizzie, and I love London, and many parts of London are very familiar to me. You know, I'll go out of my house and I'll get on the tube and I'll travel into central London and wander around. And recently, maybe because I've been reading Solveig, I've been practicing making all of it strange in my mind, as if I've never seen any of it before, as if I've never seen the people I love before, as if I've never seen my own house before, as if I've never seen my street before, as if I'm going on the tube for the first time. And it's such a thing how it reminds me of exactly what Solveig's pointing to. When I orient this way, I'm sort of amazed all the time, just in total gobsmacked amazement that any of this is possible. And then what I also feel is proper gratitude, and not some kind of shallow gratitude, but I look at what it takes to make the underground rail system. I can't believe that anybody knew how to do it, and the millions of people it took to know how to build trains and to dig tunnels and to ship the materials and to keep it running. And I've been thinking about how important it is. I think a lot of us feel quite alarmed at the moment in the world, is when we read the news or we see what's happening in our communities, or, you know, live in London, you see what's happening with the basic services that people need and how they've degraded over time and what that's causing. And you look at, I could make a huge list. And I recognize that it's very easy to disappear under the weight of the anxiety that causes of what might happen and what should we do about it. And I'm beginning to feel like it's not, that it's a very robust response to cultivate, to look for the strangeness, the wonder in everything, and to be filled with the life and energy that comes from amazement, sort of a kind of radical amazement. Because I'm noticing that instead of shutting me down, what it does is it makes me want to contribute. Like, it fuels my wish to be of service, to look that way. So it's a remarkable kind of orientation to be invited into by a practical orientation that's, in me anyway, been invited by Solveig's writing.
Mm. I'm so taken by this... we've grown accustomed to living with that knowledge without feeling dizzy every morning. Like, somehow we behave as if nothing has happened. And of course, this is just true, isn't it? Like, wandering around, thinking about that I need to get some more carrots, or have forgotten something, or, you know, it's just like, to be taken by life is just a normal thing that we're in. Maybe we're worrying about stuff, probably worrying about stuff. All these things of just normal, habitual what it is to be a person in the world with concerns and responsibilities and all those things. And of course, this is never not true. Whatever we're doing, whatever we're up to, whatever sleepiness or taking for grantedness or automatedness or just doing the thing I always do, I'm in. This is one of those truths of life that is just there always for us to come to if we want to. Like, it's just benevolently sitting there as a reality that we are improbable, that this is unfathomable vastness, that we manage to stay afloat and on the earth, and the earth is the earth, and the train tunnels got made. And it seems to me like a beautiful invitation to remembrance, to yes, carrying on with the cucumbers and the carrots and the forgetting things and have I done that and have I paid this bill or whatever. And letting it always be infused by this unfathomableness whenever we might remember. And I'm feeling really, you know, we talk about this multitudinousness thing, which is having things be side by side. And what is it? It's a gift of being human that we can have side by sideness. Like, we can feel sad and happy all at the same time, or we can feel grief and wonder, or we can feel frustration and humor, and all these things can be next to one another. And I'm really curious to feel into whether I can experience my automatic pilot and wonder at the same time. Like, I wonder whether that's possible, because I don't think I'm ever going to get rid of my automatic pilot. I think my automatic pilot's doing actually quite an important job, a good job of moving through the day, doing what needs to be done, delivering on the things I've promised, you know, all those kind of things. And yet a life with only that in it, that doesn't have this kind of wonder, like you say, or this kind of call to action from some kind of inspiring, improbable place, is a very different life. So I'm feeling the distinction between kind of awakeness to this and not awakeness to this, and how these kinds of things really matter to feeling like we are alive, to feeling aliveness in our systems, to feeling awake, to feeling like we could be curious about something. Instead of just being like, oh, I'm getting on the train, I'm getting off the train, I'm putting my ticket in the thing, we could be going, how did the rails get made? And how on earth does that thing work where you bleep your card in and not? I mean, I often think that going on the train, I've got no idea what on earth has to happen for all of the banks to be on all in it all, and for the technology and the whatever's in the card to work, all of that. There's so many chances every day. Like, how is a staircase made? For goodness sake, like going up some stairs that don't fall down and don't collapse, and all of the engineering and carpentry and goodness knows what else goes into it. So I feel like it really matters to be tuned into this in amongst the daily. And I'm feeling that invitation now. I know I'm going to get in a car today, for example. Goodness knows how, I mean, probably a lot of people do know how a car works. I'm not one of those people who studied engineering and internal combustion engines and whatever, so I don't know. And I can be in wonder about that, but I feel like there's so many opportunities just in an ordinary, like pavements, just walking along a pavement, or maybe a field, feeling what's happened and how improbable even the making of a blade of grass is, and letting that be right alongside whether I've forgotten the carrots or not.
And forgetting the carrot and our human capacity to be on automatic pilot is also part of the whole giant situation we're in. I was thinking whilst you were talking that for me, this is a conversation about sacredness and holiness.
Mm.
And they're words that I think they're words that are difficult for so many people, because they get confused with organized religion, which people have all kinds of different relationships to, some very joyful, some less good, some, but I I think that for a lot of the last 150, maybe 200 years, we've if you've grown up, certainly if you've grown up around the parts where you and I live, Lizzie, we live in a culture that has largely discarded the ideas of holiness and sacredness as something important, and has replaced them with a much more kind of cynical narrative, a sort of nihilistic narrative that is, it's all a giant cosmic joke. There's nothing meaningful. It's a sort of machine metaphor. And obviously there are lots and lots of different stories we could tune into, but that what I notice about those stories is that they render us sort of meaningless in a meaningless world. And whilst you were talking, I was also thinking about the difference between well-being and sacredness. So there's a sort of pervasive story about well-being that's very fashionable in our culture, which has got a lot of good intention in it, but it can very easily turn into a kind of, well, what I need to do is just make myself feel good about, if I do the right thing, I'll feel good about this situation I'm in. That's basically the whole world situation is a meaningless, empty one. And if I do, you know, if I have the right bath or go to the right yoga class or whatever it is. And I think that the well-being story is too small if it's only that. It seems to me that what Solvay Ballet is inviting us into is a kind of fierce and faithful engagement with existence itself, in which we can also wonder at our grief and our pain and our sorrows and our confusion. We can also wonder at injustices and then want to solve them, because we see that people and existence and life itself are all sacred. Like it's instead of tuning us out of our lives because it's all flat and I've sort of got to do something to manage that, what this does is it also invites us into a kind of intimacy with everything. Like it's dizzying to be in intimacy with something unfathomable, extraordinary, unlikely, and also incredibly meaningful, like the entire history of existence and evolution, Lizzie, that produced you, that required everything before to happen. You could not be here had any one of those things not happened, specifically any of your ancestors not living long enough to reproduce. If any one of them had not done that, there wouldn't be you here. Same for me, same for everyone. So I'm feeling, it feels to me as we're talking that there really is a call for cultivating a sense of just existing itself being holy, being sacred, life itself being holy and sacred, and then ordinary things. I'm sitting here cradling my cup of coffee and I've been feeling into letting this be, you know, this manufactured mug with the coffee that I made but was roasted by someone else and farmed by someone else and shipped across the world and people know how to do it and it can get to my house. Investing all of it with sacredness, and then I both feel here in this life, whether I'm washing the dishes, as we've often talked about, or doing something very mundane. But I think the other thing, Lizzie, is I can feel how I want to take deep care of myself and others and the world when I orient this way. And that, it seems to me, it goes far beyond feeling good and is much more like what Solvay's inviting us into, calls us into participation. It asks us to be in intimate participation with existence rather than somehow withdrawing from it, tuning out, trying not to notice as a way of controlling our experience.
It's funny, I'm kind of feeling some things as you're saying what you're saying, and thinking lots of things too. And somehow the big thing that's happening in me is like I'm feeling quite afraid. You know, when I think about just how improbable, unpredictable and remarkable it is, I can feel that I feel I get why I want to control things. I get why I want things to be smaller, because I can't really handle the magnitude of this in a kind of habitual self state. In my forgotten the carrot state, it's really hard for me to be big enough for this to sit with me and to let it inspire me to contribution. And so I'm feeling this need, and I think we've said this so many times here on Turning Towards Life, Justin, to be bigger than my normal self, to be bigger than my habitual self, to be able to breathe into something more expansive and to be in this unhurriedness with you, where I can actually notice what's happening with me in real time, tell you how I'm feeling, be with it, and then see what comes. Because ordinarily, probably in my habitual self, I would just be scared and go, oh God, I don't like that. And I'm moving away from that. Like, I can feel all of those ways of kind of bouncing off an experience and just avoiding it or trying to control something so it's smaller and feeling more comfortable and all of that. And how important it is to be in a space where I can say how I feel, breathe myself a bit bigger, relax a little bit. And I was thinking about the premise of this book, Justin, of going through a day so many times, again and again, and what kind of chance it gives you to do this thing, which is, oh, I was scared last time. I'm going to see if I can be something different this time and see if I, and of course, I haven't read this book, but I'm imagining there's a lot of probably, oh, there I am again. You know, I didn't manage to change it this time. I'm going to have a go next time. But there's time, there's the spaciousness that gets afforded in this, I guess it's like a fantasy reality of something happening again and again and having different chances and different realizations and different things, different opportunities come our way. And so I'm feeling the importance of letting myself be in relationship to this improbableness and the unpredictableness of life. And being in relationship about the way I'm feeling and the way that I'm experiencing, so that I don't have to just stay on my own in my own kind of world of reactivity to this notion, but that I can stay in the unhurriedness and in the spaciousness to feel what there is beyond that. And as I can come through that, I can feel my willingness come online. You know, my willingness to go, okay, I'm afraid, because I do feel frightened of the vastness of everything and I can't control everything. And that feels really awful, because what am I supposed to do? And, you know, I can feel the anxiety rising in the notion of the vastness. But then I can be with myself. I can breathe. I can calm my nervous system. I can do all kinds of things with my body, to then come to a place of relaxedness, so that I can entertain the vastness and I can wonder and I can hold the vastness. And then things move. And I think that's the miraculousness of it for me, is that we can be in a different relationship to a thing if we consciously want to be and do some things to enable that to happen.
A marvelous way of talking. So yes, Lizzie, I'm Salvé Ballet's book on the calculation of volume has 6 volumes to it. I'm reading volume 1 at the moment. 4 of them have been published in English, and the next 2 are being translated over the next couple of years. They were originally written in Danish. So I'm only on book 1. And I'm already at day 236 of her characters, the 236th November the 18th. And as you say, in a way, inevitably what the book is about is, if the same day is going to unfold again and again, what choices do we have about how to bring ourselves to it? Like, that there are an infinite number of ways. And she goes through so many different orientations to this same day as she goes. So many, from, you know, joy and hope and experimentation to sadness and despair, and she tunes out and she tunes in. I mean, it's really amazing study of how many different ways, how many different interpretations there are of a single day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what strikes me about what you're saying, is that's one of the reasons why it's such a good book, is that's actually what's going on with us all the time. It's a fantasy situation, but actually in every moment, that's what we're doing, is we are relating to the people and occurrences of our day from any number of different possible stories, or, as we've talked about, from any number of different parts of ourselves, which have different kind of orientations. And so your invitation to breathe ourselves a bit bigger and see what it's like to find that of ourselves which is more timeless and more spacious than the very particular graspy, grippy, holding on, I have to have this moment go this way parts of ourselves, is such a wonderful reminder. And I think I want to say, by way of, I could talk about this for ages, say by way of closing, is I want to recommend this book to anyone who loves reading novels. But the other thing, we were talking, Lizzie, a couple of weeks ago when we were doing one of the long weekend sessions of our professional coaching course, one of our very wonderful students reminded us about a film called About Time, which I want to make a pitch for, because it's about the same premise, which is, if you could go back and relive a day again and again and again, would you? And what would you learn from doing it? And if you could, what would it teach you about how to live without time travel? Which is really what the film is about, given that most of us can't time travel, as far as I know, this way. How do we approach a day with that in mind? And I think that Solveig's invitation, this passage, to remember, to hold the ordinariness and the absolute wonder and amazement at the holiness of everything, is part of the answer to that. It's living in contact with the world as it is, and, as you said, breathing ourselves big enough that we have some measure of freedom in how we bring ourselves to this maybe very ordinary, or maybe very calamitous, or maybe very wonderful, joy-filled day, in a way that honors our own sacredness and the sacredness of time and the sacredness of the day. And how I long for a world in which that way of orienting is given more credence, given more attention, not just for each of us individually, but collectively. There's something, and so I'm so glad that there are people like Solveig Ballet or Richard Curtis, who wrote About Time, all the people who make things that can remind us of this. And then very, very grateful for this conversation, Lizzie, because it also seems to me, and here's a final pitch, I suppose, for Turning Towards Life Live starting in March, is it also seems to me as we find this by being with one another. Like a lot of the time, we have to sit opposite another human and give ourselves the space and the time and the respect and the openness and the creativity and the mutual faithfulness in ourselves and in one another's capacity and goodness to be able to remember this, because of course we forget. So it's a real honor to be 435 weeks into this conversation with you, Lizzie, and to be in the conversation with all of you who are around us. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to meet you. So there are lots of ways to do that now. So maybe we'll get to see you soon. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.